take the cannoli, leave the gun. Luca Bravo sleeps with the fishes.
Luca Brazzi, by the way.
Whatever, I can remember. You come to me on my granddaughter's... Oh, sorry. Alright, let's shut up now. We're gonna need a big boat.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Okay, so, hello everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, the DS9 review program. I'm Paul Spataro. I am here with Dr. Bill Robinson.
Oh my god, I think I'm in a Poseidon adventure.
And Sir Andrew Leyland.
Hello, everybody.
Today we are doing episode 2 of season 5, which is actually the 100th episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, The Woo! Ship. But before we get to the ship, and we're moving right along here. Before we get to the ship, do we have any Star Trek news?
No. I don't think we have any this time around. Yes. Did you say anything?
What do you got, Andy?
We should save something for the second show, shouldn't you?
We didn't have anything. We only had one piece of news as it was.
Yeah, that's we got true. Nothing.
Yeah. We got nothing. We are nothing. Well, you know what? We record, and then it's a couple of months before the episode comes. And when we do have news, it's usually not timely anyway.
Yeah, it's not timely anyway.
So, yeah, that's true.
So our news
nobody's listening to us. They never liked me.
Oh. Our news is we love Star Trek.
Yes.
And moving on, I guess we'll do the ship now.
An enemy vessel,
a warship. The Jem'Hadar warship
falls into Sisko's hands.
No survivors.
To get it back, the Jem'Hadar are willing to kill for it.
This is our ship.
Was your ship. Now it's mine.
But to uncover its secret.
The Fuhrer doesn't want the ship. She wants something aboard.
Is Sisko willing to die for it?
We have you completely surrounded.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
As I previously said, it's Season 5, Episode 2, directed by Kim Friedman, story by Pam Wigginton, and Rick Kayson, teleplay by Hans Beamer.
Hans!
And it's guest starring Caitlin Hopkins, F.J. Rio, Hillary Shepard, and Ken Lesko. And before I do the synopsis, I'm going to apologize to everybody for names that I pronounced wrong, because I don't remember exactly how they pronounced them. An away team of Deep Space Nine crew, including Sisko, Dax, Worf, and O'Brien, are conducting a mineral survey for Cormaline ore on the uninhabited Gamma Quadrant planet Torga 4 via runabout when a Dominion warship crashes near their location. Investigating, they find the crew and all personnel dead, and O'Brien speculates that the ship's inertial dampeners might have failed, but Dax notes that the passengers and crew were dead hours before the crash. Sisko contacts DS9 to have the Defiant come tow the ship back to the station so that it can be studied. In the episode subplot, Odo has arrested Dr. Bashir and Quark for failure to fill out proper paperwork for the importation of a shipment of Rigelian flea spiders, and Quark additionally for the inclusion in the shipment of a number of prohibited Rigelian liquid crystals. Odo takes them to Sisko's office, where Major Kira is waiting for them, and learns that the flea spiders were for Bashir so he could extract their venom to help relieve Kira's pregnancy woes. As the away team waits for the Defiant, a Jem'Hadar ship appears in orbit, destroys the runabout and its crew, and transports a number of Jem'Hadar soldiers to the surface, where they fire on the away team, killing several of them, and mortally wounding Muniz, O'Brien's assistant. Sisko orders the crew into the Dominion ship for protection, and to their surprise, the Jem'Hadar do not follow en masse, but maintain watch. As Muniz's wounds are tended to, they find little of the ship understandable beyond its unique helm controls. The group is next contacted by Kilana, a Vorta in command of the Jem'Hadar, who requests a meeting with Sisko. At the meeting, Kilana refuses Sisko's claim of salvage rights for the ship, but offers to return Sisko and his crew safely to TS-9. Oddly, Sisko does not rebuke Kilana for the destruction of the runabout and its crew. As they talk, a Jem'Hadar transports onto the crashed ship and attacks the team, yet Muniz, even in his weak state, is able to shoot the Jem'Hadar. Kilana and Sisko immediately return to their ships, and Kilana orders her ship to fire near the crashed vessel. Sisko comes to believe that they do not intend to fire on the ship directly, as there is something valuable aboard, and are trying to intimidate them into abandoning the ship. O'Brien tries to assure Muniz that he will live, but Worf asserts that Muniz should be prepared for death. Part of an uncharacteristic flare of tempers among the away team as the bombardment continues for 10 hours. During this period, Muniz eventually dies. Sisko and the others devise a plan to bring the ship's engines online, but it fails. A liquid begins to drip from the inverted floor, and a bulkhead turns out to really be a changeling, unable to hold its form anymore. It falls to the ground and dies, turning into powder. The bombardment suddenly stops, and Kilana transports to the vessel. She explains that the Jem'Hadar from her ship have all committed suicide for allowing the death of one of their gods, and there is no further reason to prevent Starfleet from salvaging the ship. Sisko allows her to collect some of the dust of the former changeling before she departs to her ship and leaves orbit. The Defiant arrives shortly thereafter and tows the ship back to TS-9. Back on DS9, O'Brien, Worf, and others hold funeral arrangements for Muniz and the other crewmen lost. Sisko considers that their deaths, as part of their duty as Starfleet officers, aided the recovery of the Dominion vessel that will have the potential to save lives of thousands. No resolution to Bashir and Quark's problem is shown. So, I liked this episode. I thought it was enjoyable to watch. I had somewhat of a problem with the fact that they were on this mission. Why would you send Sisko to do a mining survey? When they're not only do you have everything going on with the
send the chief engineer, Dominion, the science officer, the tactical officer. Well, Worf could have been there because he's in charge of the Defiant.
Yeah, I think they needed to come up with a better reason for them to be in the area. And I just had a problem with the quick resolution of, okay, we're going to let you just go unscathed now. Think back to whatever it was, a season and a half ago when the Jem'Hadar just, went on a rampage and committed a suicide run on a Starfleet vessel.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they'd say, okay, now, because we're going to be honorable, we're letting you just leave. I understand why they didn't fire on the ship when the changeling was in there. But at that point, before these Jem'Hadar committed suicide for failing in their mission, I would think they would take revenge, or at least their perception of revenge, on Starfleet by totally annihilating the crew at that point. Because there's nothing to stop them.
Why wouldn't the Vorta, once she had the ashes, destroy them? Why give them the ship?
Well, at that point, her Jem'Hadar were gone, so I think, I don't know if she had the ability anymore.
Okay, then who beamed her back to her ship?
Do they not have automatic beam out?
Another Vorta?
Do they have automated controls that she could have just said, all right, you know, fire.
Yeah, because she beams in and out and just appears and disappears at random. So I assume she has an automatic transporter option. But
these people don't strike me as so honorable that they'd say, okay, now you can take one of our ships back to your base and study.
Why would Sisko think that he had a leg to stand on salvage law?
Yeah, that's like no, like, really? That's like him saying no backsies.
Shotgun. What is this shotgun you speak of?
I got my first.
Yeah, claimed. Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Like, oh yeah, well, international. It's an Earth tradition. Get the out of here. Get out of my ship.
Yeah, so there's certain things about the premise of the episode that I gotta say I don't think sat well.
I'll be honest with you. I coming into this when this started, and the title, and even like about 10 minutes in, I didn't even remember this episode. I was like, this is not ringing a bell. I don't remember anything about it. It was almost like watching a brand new Deep Space Nine episode.
Yeah, well,
and I had a lot going on in my life, and I just missed it.
I'm in the same boat as you. I definitely saw it before, but I had no memory of it whatsoever as I was watching it.
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting in that aspect. One other thing before I forget it. Okay, when Muñez was dying, at one scene, because once I started to, you know, I think something did come back to me, and I did kind of remember that there was a founder on the ship or something. And at one point when he's in his delirium, he's looking up at the ceiling, and he starts saying things like, do you see the fireworks? Do you see this, Poppy? Do you see that? And I believe that I should have gone back and rewound it and checked again. Isn't that the same room that the changeling drops out of the ceiling? And did he actually see the changeling, like, kind of lose its form or something in his delirium? That's what I got from that. I don't know if you guys picked up on that.
I don't know.
I mean, yeah. So,
Would he be able to hold his form right up until the time that he died, which is pretty much what he did?
Well, that's what I'm thinking is, like, he might have been losing his form because he's the only one looking up at the ceiling, or in this case would actually be the floor, because that was my reference to the Poseidon Adventure, because everything in the ship was upside down. It was crashed upside down.
Right.
Which, how are they going to resolve that once they got that thing pulled out of the ground and up into space? They were going to have to, like, you know, do a Lionel Richie dancing, you know, Fred Astaire dancing on the ceiling thing while the ship's rotating once they get it up into orbit.
So. Shouldn't they have said, you know what, we've had enough, our founder is dead, you can leave, take the ship, whatever. And then when the Defiant came, just blasted out of the sky. Wouldn't that be more true to the way they are?
To the Jem'Hadar? Because
they do not seem to be an honorable people.
Yeah. Yeah, they've infiltrated... this is very inconsistent with behavior. Andy, you haven't said much.
I quite liked this one, so I was just letting you two get all that out of the way.
And just make no mistake about it, I liked this episode. I just am nitpicking at it because I think it has... I do think there are... Yeah, like Bill says, I think there's holes in it. It's not that I didn't enjoy watching it. I did.
Yeah, I think there are. But again, it was one of those episodes that I was enjoying because the characters were selling it. I liked seeing them all fall out with each other and get pissed off with each other because they were trapped in this stinky, warm spaceship for hours. And they couldn't get it working. I liked that, especially, that this was an alien technology that, you know, Star Trek 3, they just take a Klingon bird of prey and they can fly it with no problems. And here it takes O'Brien a decent amount of time to essentially turn the lights on, because it's not a technology he's even barely familiar with. I like that they actually took the red shirt idea and did something with it. I think it's the first time since Captain Kirk that a captain...
I'm Captain Kirk!
It's the first time in a Star Trek show since him, I'm not saying it again because it'll open that impression, that The captain has actually mourned.
No, come on, you could say it again.
No, it's alright. Has actually mourned the passing of a crew member.
And, mourn! You know, oh, sorry.
But no, not that mourn. And I liked that we'd seen Muniz before, so he didn't come out of nowhere. So that was all quite interesting. Yeah, he's been in a couple of other episodes, Muniz.
Oh, yeah, wasn't he one of the guys they left in charge when Eddington left or something?
It was something like that, yeah. And
wasn't he Malcolm in charge? Malcolm in the middle?
Yeah, no, I think that was Ricky Muniz.
No, that was Ricky Frankie,
whatever.
And now he's grown up and he's a red shirt.
And he has no career. Yeah.
Or a yellow shirt. I like Jadzy as the only one who gives Benjamin Sisko shit and doesn't retreat from it. And I really love seeing Linda Carter as a voter.
What? Oh.
She did have the look.
Yeah, I guess she did look like Linda Carter. Yeah. Good point. I gotta go look at the picture again.
So I was
wondering. Bill will be back in 5 minutes.
Bill will be back. And I loved that her motive, a way of going about things was completely different to Wayoon. She's a very sexual voter. She's, you know, buttering Sisko up and he's having none of it.
Marvin Gaye in my head. Got sexual healing.
I loved it all. I thought, there's some plot problems with the plot, but for the most part, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the character beats. I enjoyed the emotional stuff. And I like seeing a funny Benzite again.
You know that Benzite, funny you say that, Benzite is another actress, Hilary Shepherd, who plays, she's going to be in a later episode, I think next season or later this season, with the genetically enhanced people that they bring together to, like the four people that are in a room that Bashir brings on the station. She's She's the hot one. And she also played in Power Rangers and a few other things. She's quite striking outside of that Benzite makeup.
I don't know, when she reappears on DS9, she may be striking, but she's creepy.
Oh, she is creepy. Yeah. But yeah.
And we'll talk about that more when we re-encounter her.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was like, man, I was just curious because I was checking out the guest appearances, who the people were, and I was like,
oh.
She was in like a girl band too in the 80s called American Girls. That's American band. American Woman.
That's not American band, that's American Woman.
American band
is a totally different song.
I know, that's why I changed. Jeez.
Andy doesn't know any of these because they're American.
What, the Guess Who did one of those?
If it's we're in England
band. Aren't the Guess Who English? Oh, maybe they're not. I don't know.
I don't think they are. And why would they sing We're an American Band if they were English?
Good point. Kudos to you, Mr. Sparrow. I see your point and move
I'm really on. Seeing the subtlety and subtext of the lyrics to the song now.
You know how long it took me to figure out that the song... I can't remember the name from Yes was about chess, you know, don't surround yourself with yourself, move on back to square. I never knew that was about chess until one of my friend's roommates, she was real ditzy and everything, and she's like, well, that song's about chess, and I was just like, I looked at her like, wow, you're telling me that, thanks.
I've seen All Good People.
People turn their heads each day, so satisfy them on my way. Sorry, this is not a Yes podcast. Sorry. The ship out of danger. Sorry.
What do you think of the subplot where he's trying to cure Kira of her sneezing?
You know, we missed the subplot last time about, or was it this episode where, no, it had to have been last time because Bashir was listening into the argument. Or wait, no, wait. Am I thinking the next episode? Maybe I'm thinking the next.
Yes, it is the next episode. You're right. So you jumped ahead.
I jumped ahead about 15 minutes because I was really into watching the show, and I was never mind.
Oops. Yeah, we will talk about that next time because it'll be interesting.
Okay. Yes. So, anyway, I thought it was neat the ship was upside down. That was the Poseidon Adventure reference at the opening there. And you know what else was cool? This is in the little opening that you guys had created. There's the quote. And I stopped and I was like, oh, that's the quote in the opener.
You're Starfleet officers!
Oh, yes.
Acting like it.
When that came up, I stopped immediately. I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Because I was trying to... every time I hear that, like, you know, I don't know where that... I don't remember the episode that comes from. Obviously, since when this episode started, I didn't remember it. So it was nice that was where I finally found out that's where that's from.
Yeah, it was quite pleasant to hear a clip that we've used, because most of them come from the pilot in that little advert thing. So that was quite nice, yeah.
Every once in a while when I hear the opener, I hear Captain Picard, and I think, he doesn't belong here.
Yeah, one of these things does not belong here. One of these things just isn't the same.
I surrender.
Oh, wait, sorry.
Did you put that together, or did Sean?
No, I did that.
Okay. So I can blame you.
Yeah, you can blame me as much as you want. I liked the O'Brien Worf subplot, where Worf is like, let him die! Prepare him for death! All the way through the episode.
It's a glorious future.
I love O'Brien goes to punch Worf in the face, and Worf just smacks him down.
Which it should be.
Yes, you know, that's, yeah, he was perfectly in character.
You know, there's like a whole thing, just to tangent slightly, but, you know, Stan Lee talked about whenever you have two superheroes face each other, it's got to end in a draw. And sometimes it gets to the point of ridiculous where, like, it's, you know, the Silver Surfer against Spider-Man and it's got to end in a draw.
Yeah.
But, you know, Star Trek has done some of that too, because, like, you know, Captain Kirk being, you know, the ultimate fighting champion and all, but he should not be able to fight one-on-one in a mano-a-mano battle against Spock, who's got far superior strength to him and is also a good fighter. And yet, when they fight to a draw.
Yeah.
You know, so when O'Brien, who's not particularly
a fighter...
Kirk uses
that double-fisted Kirk blow, so that's pretty powerful stuff, man. But you use two fists instead of one.
Ooh, yeah, the double axe handle.
Myself at you.
When O'Brien, who's not particularly a fighter, is up against a Klingon warrior of sorts, he should not be able to hold his own, and he doesn't. And I think that's more accurate.
You even get close.
Yeah,
you
but that's more accurate.
That Klingon.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I really like that bit that Worf just slapped him back down with no trouble at all.
And it's not that O'Brien is, you know, soft or anything. I'm sure O'Brien against another regular person could hold his own in a brawl.
Yeah,
but he shouldn't be able to against Worf.
Yeah. So I really like, but I love the ending as well, where Worf comes and sits, whatever he sits with him. What was it called? Not Stover Corps, was it?
Well, Stover Corps is where they go. Yeah, I don't remember what he called it. Hold on a second, I can probably find it. I've got the memory alpha up.
I got the memory.
Okay.
Akvo.
Akvo. As they would say it on Discovery. Worf.
Why is Worf doing this? Because I thought in Next Generation, wasn't there an episode where they just do a big yell when a Klingon warrior dies and then that's it?
When they die, the body's
useless. All right, okay.
But they do say that they stand and keep the body safe from predators while they make their journey to Stover Corps. So at the moment of the death, they open their eyes and then they do the roar and yell to the to the heavens.
Right.
But he was already dead. He's dead already.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that was nice that he came and sat with O'Brien there. Even after all, he's let him die. Prepare him for death. All the way.
So, like, do photon torpedo tubes always substitute for caskets?
Yes. Yes.
Apparently, no.
It's like, wow. You know.
Yeah, you can fire a photon, or you can put one of your relatives in this baby. It's a nice model.
Or you could do both, because isn't that what they did in Into Darkness?
Yeah, that's what they did with Spock and Wrath of Khan. We don't talk about Into Darkness on this show, because I'll punch you in the face.
But wasn't that where Khan's... In Into Darkness, that's where cancer.
Yeah.
Accomplices were maintained inside torpedo casings.
That wasn't Khan, that was John Harrison or whatever.
John Henry Harrison.
John Henry Jingles.
So wasn't that the guy who, you know, in they had that infomercial or commercial about, you know, the Western books that you can get. And John Henry Harrison, who was so mean, he shot a man for snoring too loud.
No. That was, I almost said John Wesley Shipp, but no.
He was definitely not John Wesley Shipp.
John Wesley Harden.
Okay.
John Wesley Shipp. A man so fast, he was, well, no, wait.
Right? Isn't that the guy who shot somebody for snoring too loud?
It was the Wild West. It was John Wesley Harden, a man so mean he once shot a man for snoring too loud.
And now, having had you stay 2 weekends over at my home, not that we slept that close to each other, but I know both you and I would have been shot by that guy.
If we would have shot by Scott Gardner.
We almost were.
Bad enough, every time I got up to go to the bathroom, Scott was always in the bathroom. That was weird.
Yeah, well, we don't know what he was doing in there, and quite frankly, we don't want to.
Yeah, I'll just stop right there. It was kind of scary to see him in the semi-darkness with no shirt on. It's an albino Bigfoot! What is it?
Alright, I think we... What were you going to say, Andy?
I didn't. I was just letting you two get all that out of your system.
I thought you were chiming in for a moment. I think we've gotten to the point where we should just rate this.
Hold on, let me just think. Is there anything else? Nah.
Or actually, before we rated.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah,
what
yeah.
What did Blaine say?
Blaine says, the ship's upside down, the people died. Oh, well, wait a minute. Back up. Beep, beep, beep. What about the end where Sisko was kind of talking about everybody, you know, the cost of the people that died?
And that's like, kind of like,
you know, she's like, well, you know... But I thought Dax was a little... I don't want to say flippant, but... I don't know. It's kind of like...
I liked that, because this wasn't supposed to be a mission where people died. It was supposed to be a jaunt off to some nowhere planet in the middle of the ass end of the Gamma Quadrant, or wherever the hell they are, to pick up some soil to come back to Deep Space Nine. And on this nothing mission, 5 people under his command died. And it was one of those nice instances where they gave all 5 of them a name. And Sisko was understandably pissed off about this. And he reams off. I mean, I've got to be honest. I didn't like the line where Sisko spells out the moral of the story for you. Where he says, if we only have trusted each other, these people would still be alive. And you're like, well, no, Ben, they wouldn't. Because as soon as the Jem'Hadar came into orbit, they blew the runabout up. So those 5 people would still be dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, you may very well have trusted each other later, but there would still have been casualties on this mission. But other than that, I did like that he had that moment at the end where there's 5 people here that I've got to write letters to their family saying that they died. And I've got to write a letter to the family saying they basically died on a nothing mission, but hopefully having a Jem'Hadar spaceship will benefit us in the long term. And I thought it was quite an interesting ending to give names to red shirts, because normally we don't care about the red shirts. And it was another thing that Deep Space Nine does better than the other shows. People died in Voyager all the time. No one gave a shit.
Considering how limited they were on people, you'd think they would give a shit.
Yeah, it's not like they had ready replacements from Starfleet in that show. But whatever. I guess that's, you know. But, you know, yeah, I do think there was a little bit of the moral of the story at the end, you know, to make it a very special DS9.
Yeah, it didn't need that line. If you cut that line out, the point of the story still remains. It just felt like, here, viewer, this is the point of the story, and we get
just,
the point.
Just in case you're too stupid to see it on your own.
Yeah, and it's like, you cut that line out, and the episode's just much better.
Hmm. Yeah, then you know, without him giving the line, then it's an episode where you start thinking of that on your own, and you start thinking of the implications of it. And it's almost like by him saying it, it relieves you of thinking of the implications. Okay, yeah, that's what it's about. Let's move on to the next episode. I do agree with you that could have just been left out. It's not like he's saying something we couldn't think of on our own there.
No, because from the whole tone of that conversation between Sisko and the Weyoun wannabe, whose name I can't remember.
Linda
Carter. The blue-eyed Wonder Woman. Yeah, her. Linda Carter.
The whole tone of that
conversation is that, you know, if we'd have done this properly, all these people on both sides would still be alive.
No, just Munoz. Munoz and your Jem'Hadar.
Just Munoz and your Jem'Hadar, guys. So it's that was the only bit that really struck me as off in this one. Anyway, Blaine
says, "Hi guys. If anything, this is the episode that marks the point where it really starts to feel like there's a war going on. We've had battles, we've had politics, but now we have the loss of innocent lives for the political motives and strategic losses. This is where you sacrifice a rook to a queen, a pawn. I also enjoyed Bashir's role in the story, brief though it was. Also, as much as the film geek in me loved the fact that the ship was upside down and they had access to floor lighting that made everything look different and interesting, part of me still wishes the artificial gravity was still functioning and the crew ended up doing a yo-yo thing in midair when they tried jumping through the hatch." Blaine. That probably would have just killed their special effects budget right there, just trying to get that one scene done.
It probably would. And we've not really talked about the Bashir story. How stupid is Bashir? Of course you need a permit to import an animal from one place to another. That's just common sense.
Is he stupid?
21st century, man. We don't need that stuff.
Is he stupid or is he arrogant that he just figures he needs it so it's acceptable?
No, he's stupid because he trusts Quark.
Okay, yeah, okay. I'll give you that. At this point, he's been on the base long enough that he should know never to trust Quark.
Yeah, he's an idiot, as he freely admits in the opening scene, which is actually quite funny, where he says, "Well, what does that make you?" And he says, "An idiot," and Quark kind of just goes, "I'd agree with that."
And just on a total unrelated topic, I'm in the background. I have my cousin Vinny silently, and he's about to say identical. So, just worth pointing out. Anyway, so ratings. I guess this one fails for Andy. I liked this episode. I thought it was enjoyable. I thought it had the proper tone as far as the loss of life and everything, even though some of the actual scripting could have been a little bit more elegant. I liked some of the suspense aspect, and I did like the resolution of the fact that there was a founder on board and that was what this was all about. I thought that was all good. I thought it was entertaining. But I did think, as we've kind of gone through, that there were plot holes here that bring it down a notch. So I'm going to give this a 3.5. I think it was a good, solid episode that I enjoyed. I just don't think it was among the elite. Anybody else care to give a rating?
All right, sorry, I was waiting for Bill.
I'm trying to think of something piffy to come up with.
Rating-wise, I'm going to go 3.5 as well. I didn't think it was as strong as the premiere, but I did think it was a very entertaining episode, largely because of its focus on the cost of the war that they're currently in the middle of, when a nothing mission turns into a bloodbath. I liked all of that. I liked seeing the crew fall out with each other, because we weren't allowed to do that on Next Generation. I thought all of that was mostly realised organically. And I did like the ending, where Sisko couldn't write his report because he's got 5 dead people that shouldn't have been dead. I thought it was a really touching moment for him to handle. I liked it, so yeah, 3.5.
I'll give it 3.5 dead crewmen for... Oh wait, that's kind of dark. I'll give it 3.5 upside down ships. It was entertaining. It was nice that it was one that I had, I guess, forgotten. And now that I just can't picture anything but Linda Carter in... Now that you guys have put that image in my head, I want to hurry up and get this episode over. Wait.
Sorry, and go watch Billy Joe and the Outlaw.
it was nice to get, you know, a little extra, or just
a little humanity added instead of just, oh yes, another bunch of dead crewmen. Yeah, move along, nothing to see here. Oh, and Alvin has just come in. I don't know if Alvin liked the episode.
Alvin is a tough taskmaster.
He tasks me.
All right, so we have one piece of email from Faith. Anybody care to do the honors?
I don't have anything open. Sorry.
I'll do it.
Yeah, you didn't read anything today.
No, that's true.
It's in your contract.
Please, Andy, control yourself.
Captain Flatulence, knock it off.
Our first email.
All right. Do you want to wait? You want to wait for that to quiet down?
I'll try and see if he actually stops doing that.
Let's just play the girl from Ipa Nima.
Ipa Nima. It sounds like he's trying to play the girl from Ipa Nima with a buzzsaw. Buzzsaw's ready. Oh no, it's bonesaw.
Faith Gillum's emailed in, "Hello Niners. After I sent my last email, I felt a bit of a fool." Well, we feel like fools every week.
Now, for f***ing sake.
Should we leave the email?
You know what? Bill, can you read the email, and Andy, you can just mute for a minute?
Oh, give me the site again. I don't have it open.
Or it's silenced up again. Maybe Andy could try and pick up where he left off. Let's try. Yeah. Let's give it a shot.
"Hello, Niners. After I sent my last email, I felt a bit..."
Can they just shut up for 5 minutes? That's all we need.
Shut up!
We just need 5 minutes.
Wait, okay, what's the password? No capital?
No.
Okay.
Andy, you want to try again?
We're just trying to read an email!
I know, but it's entertaining every time you start something
there. I'm opening.
Have Angela read the email.
"Hi, hello Niners. After I sent my last email, I felt a bit of a fool. I got excited about being able to share my thoughts on Star Trek that I got carried away. My emails got ridiculous." No, they didn't, Faith. They were fine.
So we've enjoyed your emails, Faith.
We did, yes. "And spend more time editing, i.e. cutting the length. My sincere apologies. I've been thinking more about an idea that was brought up several times. Money within the Federation. You guys might want to hold this one for an episode you don't have much to say about. We know the Federation has money, and that certain crew members do as well. The evidence needs go no further than Quark. He doesn't trade in anything but money. So if everyone on Deep Space Nine has to pay Quark, they have to get the money from somewhere, right? The primary reasons we get jobs are to pay for our and our family's needs. These needs generally encompass sustenance, shelter, education, and medical care. If we didn't have these four big bills, what would we all choose to do with the time we spend at work? Would we just sit around all day for the rest of our lives? Or would we work to pay for our hobbies and dreams instead of our mere existence? This is what I think the Federation, or at least Earth, has done. The Federation could ensure that everyone has a replicator, a home, education if they choose, and medical care. The basics. After that, everything else you have to pay for. This encourages people to find careers they find fulfillment in. You can save for better things, fun things, or passions. Now, for explaining janitor-type positions still needing done, there can still be a hierarchy. You start out entry-level and advance through merit or tenure. Thus, everyone starts at the bottom and works to the top if they choose, or they can jump off to a different career path with little trouble. Bashir's dad does this. O'Brien talks about his enlisted men transferring to waste extraction from time to time. Rom starts out there and then becomes a member of the engineering team. Could it just be a rotating system for all lower ranks up to a certain rank tenure? Less desirable positions are rotated to everyone in the lower ranks, so no one is doing it forever, but it is a part of growing up, so to speak. Service to the community, being part of a societal culture kind of thing. Privileges and pay can increase as you do. The Federation might even let you choose how you are paid via rations, extra vacation time, credits to be cashed in, or actual money, depending on your needs and desires at the time. This explains the trading of services / items that also seems to be common. There would still be people that would not do anything, but since this is an idealized thought, we can assume that's a very small percentage. I imagine this also explains why Sisko's dad has customers. Replicated food is free, but grown ingredients ingredients could be different. If you want real food, you have to go out and pay for it in some fashion. This is also Mr. Sisko's passion, which is why he finds a lot of fulfillment in working very long hours in a difficult profession. It could be on a credit system that Mr. Sisko turns into the government computer, maybe. Anyway, that is the basis of my idea. Fulfill the basics and everything else you have to find through a career. The system encourages people to find careers they either like or potentially like after they put their time in to get promoted for. Nobody would necessarily be working at a job they hate just because they have to feed their family or could be homeless. This idea also eliminates a great deal of stress and allows for mistakes and growth to happen without failure being a crisis. I'm sure there are holes in this idea, but feel free to point them out. It is extremely ideal. It is an extremely idealized perception and likely wouldn't work in reality, but it connected the most dots for me. Hopefully this gives you guys something to chew on. Faith, Gilliam.
Thank you, Faith. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's one of the better thought out explanations for the financial situation in the Star Trek world. They had a whole big lengthy discussion on it recently on the most recent episode of Star Trek Monthly Monday, the Next Generation episode. And Chris kept saying, well, I think, you know, it's only a small percentage of society that won't do anything, and they're accounted for, and that everybody else is going and working because that's kind of the more advanced cultural way that we've gotten at that point. And Scott kept saying, but what about the lazy shits? And I just kept laughing as I was listening to it, because I kind of agree. And I do think, if you look at work now, I think, you know, I don't care who you are and I don't care where you work, I bet you there's people who do their best to get away with doing as little as they possibly can whenever they can, that you can point to in your respective offices. If you can't, you're probably that person.
I was just sitting there thinking, no, I can't think of anyone like that.
But, you know, I think there is, unfortunately, an element of human nature that there are people who, I don't care how much fulfillment some people get out of doing a job, they will not, and they just want to sit on the couch eating bonbons watching movies. Or even worse, they want to scam to get more than they should out of things. I'm sure that does exist, but Faith's way of describing it, I think, does give a motivation to people to do more, because it's like, okay, you could have the basics, you know, you could have your little cube to live in with, food, water, clothing, and television, and the basics, but if you want to go out, if you want to live a more fulfilled life, then you got to work and earn it. So there is a motivation. She's giving a motivation for people to work harder and to do things that they might not otherwise choose to do, because they want not just a comfortable way of life, they want a better way of life, and they want to have, those extras. So it does make sense to me. I don't know. I don't think that's what Gene Roddenberry was pushing, and I don't think that's what Captain Picard was talking about in First Contact when he was explaining how, you know, the monetary system no longer exists. But I do think Faith's explanation is better than what they gave us, because what they gave us, you know, there may be holes in Faith's way of looking at it, but the holes are bigger in every other way I have ever heard of it presented.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny because my wife and I just had a discussion about this, because a lot of times, and you guys know behind the scenes, I've been, stress can be, work can be stressful, and a lot of times, it just where I work right now is just, it's just crisis to crisis to crisis, jumping from one thing, one frying pan into a bigger frying pan, and it's just all reactive, and it's crazy. And just this week, I had a chance, because we have a guy that we're bringing on, he's been an installer, and I'm training him how to do some of the programming stuff. And I was saying to my wife, I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm trapped, because what I've always really wanted to do is be a teacher, but the position I'm in and the money I make and my financial position doesn't allow me to step back and pursue that. So I'm trapped in this career that I can't, it's not that I can't get out of, it's just that it would be such a financial hardship to try to get out of it, that I'm not meaning to do this for a joke, but I got nowhere else to go, is the way I feel like. I got nowhere else to go. It's like I'm stuck.
I got nowhere else to go! I got nowhere else to go!
I mean, I guess I could make a change if I really wanted to, but because of commitments and responsibilities, I can't. And it's like, I would, you know, so my wife's like, well, you should try to teach in, you know, your work. I'm like, yes, there are those positions, but unless you're working in the branches in certain parts of the country where they're at, and you're waiting for the guys that are already in those positions to die, you're not going to get those jobs. I said, so that's, I have to be content when I get these little moments to when I can teach somebody here what I'm doing and just latch onto that and just stay with the career that, I don't say I hate it, but I don't really love it either. It's a job.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was real life with Dr. Bill Robinson. You brought me down, man.
I want to live.
But, you know, I mean, the other thing is, you know, like when they were talking about it on Star Trek Monthly Monday, you know, the conversation got into the point of, okay, you know, there are people who are going to work for the fulfillment of things and whatever. But who says, you know what, I can live a comfortable life with food and, you know, the basics, but, you know, I want to go and clean the latrine. You know, that person just doesn't exist. Now, I would like to think by the time we get to Star Trek time, perhaps the cleaning latrine is automated. Maybe you don't need to have, you know, somebody walking around with a bucket full of soapy water and a mop. So that would kind of explain that away a little bit. But, you know, there's always going to be the dirty job. Who wants to do those?
But sometimes really dirty jobs, I've done crap jobs in my life, and I've been dead tired when I came home. But sometimes there's no stress there a lot.
I agree, but I also don't think anybody goes through life wanting to do that job. I think sometimes you may get fulfillment out of doing it because it's mindless and it's physical, and you know, you just kind of walk away feeling like I didn't really have to.
Because believe me, I'd love to be able to come home and just leave work at work.
Yeah, well, I think we all wish we could do that sometimes. But you know what my point is, I don't think anybody strives to do the dirty job. I don't think that's anybody's goal as they're growing up, is I want to grow up to be the guy who cleans the crap. But
I'm number one in the number two business.
But if you have a carrot that you're waving in front of them, that yes, you know, you could live your comfortable life, but now you could have extras if you do the dirty job, which is really the one that you're qualified to do, then maybe people will do it. Maybe people will step up and do it to get those extras. Of course, that also doesn't take into account the people who are going to try and scam the system and get the extras without doing the extra work. But, you know, that's a matter for another day, and that's a matter of something that would probably just get so complex that we couldn't even address it.
And anyway, you're for quiet.
I like that Faith gave us food for thought on a subject we've brought up many times. I think everybody who discusses Star Trek, you know, in depth, gets to that point eventually. You know, how does this society work? And you know, Faith, I think Faith did as good a job of explaining it as I've ever heard.
Yes, I want to live in Faith's world.
Faith's world. Faith's world.
Helium, excellent party time.
All right, and I guess on that note, we'll figure out what we're doing next
again,
time.
Again, Andy is so quiet. This is someone like him.
Let's invite him to say something. What are we doing next time?
Next time, an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. We're looking for Parmac in all the wrong places, which sounds like an episode Bill came up with the title for.
It does.
It does. That's looking for Parmac in all the wrong places. Looking for Klingons in too many faces.
Only a Ferengi can put a price on love.
You may be worth more than all the Latinum in the quadrant.
But when Quark falls for a Klingon woman,
she's glorious.
The cost is more than he expected.
Why am I putting myself through this?
To seduce a Klingon.
What does she see in that parasite?
Quark must learn to be a Klingon. Love never hurt this bad on the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
All right, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
What was I saying?